It is time for Astro Bob's Backyard Astronomy. Good morning there, Starshine. Mr. Bob King, our regular host. Hi there. Oh, there you are. Sorry about that. I didn't push the right button. See how I am?
That's all right.
Oh, Bob, that's it. Next time, you're coming in here to the station, and I'm going to sit at your house. And you're going to do the entire show and be brilliant, and I'm just going to sit at your house and drink some coffee.
There's a bowl of grape nuts with sliced bananas waiting for you then.
There we go. I think I can stay out of trouble that way.
That's a serious meal.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I sent you this morning's goofy Stardate. Every so often, Stardate just makes me laugh out loud. It's a little feature that we air. Oh, it's in the 6 o'clock hour somewhere. See, it's usually too early for me to even be paying attention. Stardate comes on at 6:32. And it's too early for me to know exactly what time it is, but it just makes me laugh. And Hail on Jupiter?
Yeah, it even ties in with something that I wanted to talk about today. Yeah, there's hail. Well, it wouldn't be too much of a surprise that there'd be hail on Jupiter, because the whole place is nothing but clouds. When you look at the planet, you don't see a surface. That surface is tucked way, way down, thousands of miles beneath the cloud decks. And there's probably forms of rain, you know, once you get deeper down where it's warmer. But on the outside of Jupiter, the clouds that you see, which kind of give the planet a creamy white appearance, maybe a little bit of yellow, too, the clouds are made mostly out of ammonia ice crystals. And there are thunderstorms there, kind of like the ones we had last night.
Oh, that was a thing.
That really was amazing, those thunderstorms.
Thunder and lightning in the middle of the night. It's like, oh, hey, wow.
Right. It's back again.
Yes.
And Jupiter is interesting because, you know, it's just everything is just amped up on Jupiter because it's the largest of the eight planets. So it has super, really big, powerful lightning bolts. But they've made some recent discoveries that Jupiter also has lightning and storms that are similar to the Earth further up in the cloud tops. And that ammonia, it can mix with water vapor when it's blown up from below, and the two kind of congeal together to form mush balls.
Nice.
So, and those.
But as they pointed out, it's like the stuff in your window cleaner.
Yes, it's a mixture of water and ammonia, and so
when you're driving, when it rains on Jupiter, you put your car in the driveway. And instead of going, I just washed my car and it had to rain, you say, my car is filthy and I'm putting it outside. And then it rains on it. And all you have to do probably in the morning is polish it with a soft cloth.
Yeah, it just rains Windex. Well, that's, you know, when we go to Jupiter in our spaceships, that's exactly how we're going to clean them. We're going to take a quick dip in the ammonia Windex-like clouds.
I like it.
And then pop out and get to Earth just as shiny and brand new as ever.
I'm pretty impressed. And all the engineers are going to go, oh, wow. And they're going to say, yeah, I had it washed.
Yeah, I just had it washed for free, too.
Exactly. Nice. So,
speaking of Jupiter,
nice.
This morning, we had a little bit of clouds, but we had like a double conjunction happening here in the next couple of days. The first one happened this morning with the crescent moon and Saturn. And a conjunction is when the moon and a planet, or two planets, or a planet and a star line up in the sky, usually one right above the other, and that happened this morning with Saturn. But tomorrow morning, it'll be a little bit more obvious, except for the clouds, because the weather's not looking good the next few days. But tomorrow morning, the moon and Jupiter will line up. So if you want to imagine this mushball car wash happening, it would be tomorrow morning. All you have to do is, you need a spot where you can face towards the southeastern sky, and that happens to be the best direction in at least the Duluth Superior area, because you can get down to Lake Superior.
Right.
And you can look out, and you see, all you have to do is, there's the moon, and then, oh, right above it, there's the planet Jupiter. So it's great to see those planets return to the morning sky. What's really cool, the reason why you have back-to-back conjunctions is because the moon, is because Jupiter and Saturn are about 12 degrees apart, which is a little more than one fist held horizontally against the sky. You know, when you reach your arm out and you make a fist.
Right.
And the moon moves almost that exact distance every single day as it orbits the Earth. So, bing, you get Saturn on one day. Next day, the moon moves about a fist, and bing, there's Saturn. There's Jupiter.
Nice.
So it's really cool that it happened one day after the other, and it shows you exactly when you see the two planets, okay, when it clears, and you see those two planets, the separation between them is just about the same as what the moon moves each day. So it's a nice marker in the sky, but it's temporary because their separation is always changing slowly because those two planets are on the move.
I have separation anxiety.
Well, Jupiter, you're going to have to wait 19 years for the two planets to get back together.
Oh, geez.
So they're going to be separate for a long time.
All right, I know I really have anxiety. All right.
Well, we'll try to alleviate that with some good news about Mars.
Oh, everybody's at Mars.
Well, yeah, there is just so
Mars
much
is so crowded these days. It's like nobody goes there anymore because it's so crowded.
Somebody needs to do like a Mars, you know, like the newspapers do a morning update every day.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Somebody needs to do like a regular Mars update for all the different spacecraft there, which include the United Arab Emirates, China, Europe, and, of course, the United States. And right now, we've got the rover, the Perseverance rover, which landed in Jezero Crater a month or so ago. And we've got exciting news happening on April 11th. That will be the expected first flight for Ingenuity.
That's Sunday.
Which is a little Mars helicopter.
That's Sunday. Okay.
Sunday, April 11th. Right now, what's cool is that it was sort of stuck in the bottom of the rover where it was powered and kept warm, you know, like a chicken laying on an egg.
I like that.
and the rover set it down on the ground, and then it quickly pulled away. It trundled away, which, by the way, you can go on the NASA website. Just type in NASA Perseverance. Go on the website, click the news link, and you can hear the sound of the rover trundling across the surface of Mars.
Cool.
Microphone. Anyway, I digress. So it trundled away, and then so that the Ingenuity would be exposed to the sunlight because it has solar panels.
It was like a chicken going to get breakfast and leaving the egg in the sun to stay warm.
Yes, and then flat, you know, maybe opening up its little wings. And
nice.
So we've got solar panels on that Ingenuity, which charges up its batteries. And it just successfully slept overnight out in the cold, all on its own, at 130 degrees below zero after it got that solar recharge. So that was a key thing because maybe the batteries wouldn't have worked, in which case that would have been it. No flying. So far, everything is really proceeding well, and on Sunday, everything keeps going well. We'll see the first flight of Ingenuity, and of course, it'll be taking pictures when it's up in the air, and it'll act like a drone, and it'll be the very first powered flight ever on any planet. So I'm excited about that, and having run a drone myself, I'm really eager to see how well, what kind of an operator the rover is, as far as running the drone.
Well, we know it's a lousy mother.
Well, no.
We know.
It's incubated.
Like, good luck, kid. It's 130 degrees. Well, let's see if you can make it on your own.
Yes, but it was time.
There's
always a time when you got to push the chick out of the nest.
All right, so let me ask you something. Let me ask you a philosophical question.
Yes. Yeah.
All of these amazing things, and lay people like myself we can't even begin to scratch the surface of the technology, the knowledge, the math, the science, the physics, the that goes into these, that goes into getting something to fly, period, much less to fly to Mars and to have one robot do this for another robot, and then this does this and this does that. You have an inkling of those things, having studied these things and been a fan and an enthusiast for years.
Mm-hmm.
Should we know more about it? Should we appreciate more? Or should we just go, oh, it's magic, and just kind of take it for granted like we do?
It's never magic. It's always somebody's really hard work, you know? somebody went to, somebody got interested in, you know, engineering or the sky, and they went to school and they became fascinated, and they're really smart in whatever their profession was. They joined NASA, and I don't look at it as magic. I just see it as human endeavor and desire for knowledge and curiosity. It's motivated by a very, very, it all comes down to that powerful emotion, I think, is the desire to know more and to get your why and what and how questions answered. So I think that motivates a lot of people to just do excellent work. And that excellent work is what's on Mars right now in Jezero Crater, perseverance and ingenuity. And it is amazing. And I think we can at least share in all the details of it, because it's all online now, where you can just go to the website and spend your whole day, you know, reading the different news stories and then going through the raw images, for instance, on the Mars Perseverance website and just seeing what it's like to be on Mars. I mean, we're so fortunate to be able to partake of all the genius that's gone into this. So it is totally amazing, but you can learn so much more about it because it's right there at your fingertips.
Ah, I tell you, you know, it's pandemic time is not the time that I would have said this, but in so many ways, it is such an amazing, amazing time to be alive.
I agree. Wonderful things keep happening. You know, people don't stop, and they keep finding ways to communicate it, too. So, yeah, including your radio program, right?
Well, and, you know, and the ways that we have come up with to communicate with one another when we can't do it in person are ways that as we move forward, where we can get together in person, we'll go back to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But where we have been separated by people, from people by distance, that doesn't have to be an issue anymore. And that's one of the things that I am super, super excited about. Because the university has been bringing in so many magical guests from all over the country now. And it's like, why not? And so we have access and the opportunity to talk to these people, and it's great. We're
plus
just
you can
about
sit in your house and you can eat grape nuts.
Yeah.
You're absorbing all this amazing information from experts across the world.
I love that part. I love that part. What else? Of course, it's, you know, yeah, rain all week. But if we get little glimpses of clear skies or anything at any point, is there anything coming up that we're going to want to make a note of that we can go out and take a look at? We get partly sunny skies on Saturday partly sunny on Sunday. But, yeah, it's pretty much like cloud central.
Yeah, it really
is. For the next week.
We've been fortunate to have a number of partly clear nights. Just the last five nights, four of them have been clear to partly clear. We have, you know, there's various things happening. There's a little comet in the morning sky. There was a nova. But as far as things that you can see, what's happening is the winter constellations are quickly disappearing. So if you face to the west, you'll see that you've got to be out at around 9:15, 9:30 to see Orion and all of his friends as they pass off to the west. And if you look to the east, you've got the spring stars coming. And one thing I can, for listeners, if they want to find a couple of bright spring stars, is to look up. I'm going to be doing something this week, by the way, on something called the spring triangle, so you can watch for that. But you can look up towards the Big Dipper, and I've mentioned this star before, but you can follow the arc of the handle of the Big Dipper. Just go down following that curve, and it will take you to Arcturus, which is that brilliant orange giant star. And then if you continue that arc now and just keep wrapping down, curving down towards the horizon, you will reach another star called Spica, which is the brightest star in Virgo. So that's kind of what's coming up in the spring sky. And one of my favorite constellations, once you arc to Arcturus and spike to Spica using the Dipper handle, when you get to Spica, look just about a fist, maybe a little less, to the right, and you're going to see a jaunty little trapezoid. And that is Corvus the Crow.
Oh, nice.
I love Corvus. It seems like it's about the right size for a crow, and it's really a distinctive constellation, even though it's nothing but a trapezoid. But you can add that to your constellation list the next clear night.
I love it. Bob, thanks a million. And when we talk again in a couple of weeks, let us hope that we have nothing but sunshine and clear skies to look forward to.
And unicorns and rainbows.
And unicorns and rainbows. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you.
Mr. Bob King, our host for Astro Bob's Backyard Astronomy, a regular feature of Tuesdays here on Northland Morning.